Welcome to Pacific Beer Chat. I'm Mike.
And I'm Warren.
And I'm Steve.
And we are going to be drinking Strange Fellows Brewing today.
You can tell we're on our third episode of the night, can't you?
Not at all. All right, so this episode, we're going to break into the first year of the fellowship program at Strange Fellows. So it was a program, if I remember right, it was like $150 to buy in.
Okay.
It guaranteed you two bottles of four releases. They're 750 milliliter bottles. Most of them are sour wild ales, and they're all crazy one-offs.
So these were unique releases, to only be released to people who own the membership.
Yes. They've allowed some of the bottles to be sold for drinking in the brewery only to non-membership, but only the members could get the bottles. And then you were also entitled to buying extra bottles if you would like.
Gotcha.
I think about $18 a bottle at the time.
Okay.
And for a 750 milliliter bottle of rare beer, that's actually really reasonable.
Yeah.
Especially when you know that Ian is involved with making these beers and he knows his beer.
So these are all from the inaugural year then, 2016.
Yes, 2016. So we've got the, I'll go through them here. We've got the Greybeard Old Ale. This was 8% alcohol.
Was 8%.
Well, yeah, it is. It said, made exclusively for our member, or for, made exclusively for members, our fellowship beers are almost entirely barrel-aged sour or unique cuvées, and bottle runs are extremely limited. Since opening the brewery in 2014, we have been stockpiling barrels of all sorts of strong, sour, and Brett fermented beers, which we draw upon to create these singular offerings. It says this is an oak-aged with Brett, raisin notes, warming, boozy, malty character.
Hmm.
And this one, it looks like it came out in May of 2016.
Mm-hmm.
This one came out in August 2016. This is Little Red One. It's a 5.6% alcohol sour beer. And it says it's got notes of blackcurrant, West Coast sour, dry, herbaceous, black tea aroma.
Curious about that one.
And then we had the Nocturnum Galactica, which is 6.5% alcohol. It was a strong beer.
Hmm.
And it was oak-aged 1 year with Brett, Galaxy Dry Hopped, fruity, funky, leathery.
October 2017, I see on that.
Yes. And then the last one came out in November. This is the Boris Arabica. Percentage has been kind of wiped off here. It's probably 9 or 10% alcohol. It is a Russian Imperial Stout. This is their Boris is their Russian Imperial Stout. This was a barrel-aged version with coffee.
I was going to say Arabica sounds like coffee.
Mm-hmm. So it was an Imperial Stout aged in red wine barrels, vinice, and coffee character.
Mm.
All right, well, we're going to drink these in order, though, because that's the way they were released.
Sure.
Sure.
So we'll start with the gray beard.
Appropriate.
Yeah. Here, you open, I hold the glass for
four. Out of safety, because these are all, most of these are Brett beers. They're from 2016.
They could have fermented further in the bottle.
We're going to open them in the kitchen.
This could be messy. Here, stand by. Hold all right, the play-by-play here. Mike has a one-liter Stein that he's holding. He's thinking he might need to pour the entire bottle at once into this receptacle. There he goes. He's popping the cap. It's rising in the neck. Oh, yeah. She's a gusher. Wasn't too bad. Didn't hit the ceiling or anything.
There we go.
It's definitely what I would call lively.
There we go.
All right. It's under control. Not too bad, but definitely lively. This is a deep color on this one.
All right, you can start the pours.
Wow. Yeah, it's lively.
Let's see.
It's actually not that bad once you...
So this is, again, a deep, deep amber, light copper, slight haze, off-white, tannish head, rocky. Oh. It's got a very interesting aroma. definitely picking up Brett, that earthy, bready thing in the aroma.
Now, I haven't had this beer since 2016. So I'm excited to try this again because I've been sitting on these bottles for a while.
Kind of lightly fruity.
Yeah, I'm getting sort of a tarty, fruity, almost like a sour passion fruit sort of thing. Mm. Going.
And again, this was an old ale at 8% alcohol.
It's yeah, like you said, it could be higher than 8 now.
Well, yeah, it could be, yeah.
Looked like there might have been some further fermentation. A little.
I think the head's too big on mine right now because I'm not getting a lot on the nose. It's a little bit of sweetness, but maltiness.
I'm finding complex but a little muddled on the nose. I can't quite pick stuff out.
Oh, that tastes so good.
Oh, yeah, and the flavor. Wow.
Oh, hello.
This is bringing me back a little bit to on our previous episode, the 9 Mile Legacy, a little bit. Just it's got all those nice like dark fruits and everything.
This one's got a little more alcohol warmth. There's no burn, but it really sort of warms you right up.
Oh, it's stronger.
Yeah.
But, not much of a sweet component.
There definitely is toffee and like brown sugar notes.
Yeah, but not the sweetness part of it.
And then you're getting that. I was going to say this has a good sweet component to it for me.
Yeah,
yeah.
I would. It's not cloying at all.
The malt, but not the actual sweet.
Right. Like I wouldn't say it was like as the previous episode, the 9 Mile, but it's got a really nice sweet backbone to it, like in all the malt flavors.
And even though the bottle was a bit of a gusher there, it's not like crazy carbonated. It's not. Excuse me. It's not off. Like it has. It's not that it had an infection or anything. It's just that it probably re-fermented in the bottles.
Yeah,
right. It's been sitting in a bottle for 3 years, been
chomping away.
Yeah, which happens. Brett's a thirsty one.
Wow, that is pretty interesting.
But yeah, no, it's so many different malt flavors. It's like dark fruits.
I think there's
it's not as big as an English barley wine, but it's got notes of similarity to that.
It does. It's surprisingly light bodied for what it is.
And actually, truthfully, when you say that it's 8% alcohol, I'm not tasting the alcohol that much.
I think I am.
Are you?
I'm detecting at least a 7.5.
Okay.
And it's pretty warm to me.
Yeah, I'm going.
I must already be warm then.
Like, I'm definitely no burn, but it's got that, it warms the chest.
Noticeable.
Yeah. Well, there we go. Yeah, there's no alcohol burn to it. Yeah. It's not like, you know, you can even get a 6% beer that's just like, ooh, that's boozy.
Yes.
There's none of that.
No.
But this is it's a very skilled beer. Like, this is well crafted.
Wow.
Yeah. But I mean, Strangefellows, when you think of Strangefellows, if you know them, you just know them for really, really well-crafted beers, really interesting, always kind of pushing the boundaries.
For a bigger beer that's been in barrels and stuff, though, this is surprisingly on the lighter, easier drinking side of things.
And like I said, this was their first release for the Fellowship, and I think after this one, they did pick ones that were a little more adventurous,
right?
But like this is just so easy to drink for a big beer.
It's not too rich, I think, is really the key there.
Yeah.
And I'm looking forward to, if it's more Fellowship beers or whatever, just more of these crazy barrel-aged beers coming out of Strangefellows, because whatever it is well-made. Like, Ian does not release a beer that isn't really, really good.
These were one of the places that showed up in that list of the 5 most awarded breweries in BC.
And there's a reason for it, yeah. Ian Hill has been known for a long time as an amazing brewer, but between being at Yale Town as the head brewer for the Mark James Group.
And I think they were tied with Brassneck, I want to say.
Could be.
For 4th place in the top 5 most awarded.
Wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah.
They also have a great staff in general.
Yeah, I've always had a good time there.
Great tasting room staff, great brewing staff. Yeah. Shout out to Nick and Megan there. They're great. Now, this is one you can sip on and just sip on.
I don't know why, but I'm thinking this would pair nicely with a piece of carrot cake.
Actually, I could see that. And I'm not a big carrot cake fan. But yeah, I could not because I'm not a big cake fan in general. But yeah, I could totally see that.
Yeah, a little nice tangy cream cheese icing on that. That would go really nice.
Yeah, I think that would pair lovely.
Yeah.
What about a cinnamon bun, maybe?
Yeah, I can see that.
Maybe.
With, again, the cream cheese icing.
Yeah, you got to get the cream cheese icing. Mm-hmm. Not just the sweet.
As soon as you said cream cheese icing, I'm like, cinnamon bun.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. one of the good plump raisins in it.
That would work.
I'll actually agree with that, and I usually don't. Yes.
If you're going to do raisins in a cinnamon bun, they got to be like the rehydrated ones that are nice and plump and juicy.
Yeah.
It can't be that dried crap.
Nice.
But as an inaugural beer of their fellowship.
Not bad.
Like,
yeah.
Wow, huh?
Good one, yeah.
And
many of these haven't been popped already.
Yeah, I don't know. That'd be really interesting to find out.
Yeah. If anybody out there still has one waiting for you, let us know. We're curious.
And let's also say, 2016, it's been around for a couple of years.
Yeah.
It's not oxidized yet.
No, it's survived quite nicely.
Yeah. It's definitely open with caution.
Yeah.
Have a big glass beside you so you can catch all the beer and then pour it again into a different glass later.
I'm going to say that's a solid 200 mil in that glass for overflow.
Yeah. Well, that was also just like, shit, let's pour so it doesn't keep blowing out of the bottle.
Still.
But you need to have a vessel nearby.
Yeah. Yeah, be ready. Be prepared to decant.
But one of the biggest issues for Strange Fellows right now is that the beers they're winning in awards are always their fellowship beers.
Is that right?
And
so it's always limited stuff that you can't necessarily get your hands on.
It's hard to build the excitement for your regular regular drinkers if they're not in the fellowship club, because you win this award, you go in, oh, you can't try that.
Right.
Yeah.
It's only for these people. You should have bought into it.
Oh, jeez.
So, I mean, that's always a struggle, I think, for breweries when you have these kind of clubs. If that's what you're winning for and people want to try it, how do you bring it out the next year as a regular release? How do you deal with it?
I think the way to manage that is you give your fellowship members or your club members, whatever your club might be called.
Yeah.
You give them first opportunity.
Yeah.
At the beer. And then perhaps after they've had their 2-week window or whatever, then you can open it up to people who visit your site.
And it could be even longer than 2 weeks, even like 2 months.
Sure. Yeah.
These are all barrel-aged beers.
These kind of beers, they'd last. Yeah. So maybe.
This is 2016.
So you give them a 2-month window, whatever.
Yeah. And, you know, it doesn't have to be an expensive buy-in. No. If you're not going to guarantee bottles, it doesn't have to be an expensive buy-in. If you just give a guarantee for a couple months or whatever, people will buy in, I'm sure.
Right.
Although, I mean, at 150, I think it was, like, I'd buy in. I have.
You did.
There you go. That's why we're drinking these.
I also have the second and the third release of the fellowships in my cellar. We're not going to crack them tonight. But
that reminds me. Future. What storage conditions do you have these in? Is this the cardboard box or is this?
No, this is in a proper temperature controlled wine cellar.
Ooh.
The new one that you gave me.
Oh, yeah.
Perfect.
Right.
So, one sec, actually.
How's that working for you?
Sounds lovely. Check the temperature at that. So, it's like a wine fridge?
He had one, and then I won one at work, and I have neither the space nor the inclination to do that sort of cellaring, so
yeah.
I gave it to him for his birthday.
Nice. How many bottles does it hold?
It's a robust unit. It's like 3 feet tall?
Something like that, yeah.
I want to say it was like a
40-ball
unit, but I could be wrong about that.
Cool.
It's currently at 11 degrees Celsius.
Nice.
So it might be a little colder than it should be. I might have to adjust that. But
Well, it has gotten cooler out.
Yes. It's not working as hard.
Temperature is lower.
Our apartment here does get quite warm in the summer, so it's actually quite important to have that in the summer.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have a closet that I use for my cellar conditioning, and it's closest to the front door of our unit, which is closest to the hallway, which is probably the most regulated temperature in the entire building.
Because this building, the hallway is the least regulated, I think. Oh my God. One hallway is going to be a scorcher, the next one is freezing.
Honestly, our temperature in our apartment doesn't change much over the summer even.
Oh, really?
I got an air conditioner, so it never gets crazy, right?
We've got one in the bedroom we use at night, and that's it.
Yeah.
And also, we are facing the way the sun is most of the afternoon, so we get hot.
Yeah.
It's a 34 bottle unit, sorry.
34, okay. Well, that's not bad.
Yeah.
I like that. And the price was right.
Yeah. It's funny, though.
I figure that buys me into a few more of these sessions. Well,
yeah. Well, and the thing about wine cellars, too, is they're pretty reasonable. You buy them on, like, Black Friday now or Boxing Day.
Yeah.
And if it dies, Google first what it could be, because my first wine fridge, all I had to do was change a little ceramic disc in it, and it worked for another, like, 4 years.
Like a sensor or something?
I don't know what it was, but it was a little ceramic disc that it just broke.
And
it will not work. The condenser will not turn on without that ceramic disc.
Huh.
So I was about to throw the damn thing out. For $2 on
eBay,
I fixed the whole damn thing.
Did you have to solder and stuff?
No.
Really?
Open a little thing, pop it out, put it in, close it.
Wow.
Yeah.
You got to be joking. No. Oh, bloody hell.
So, yeah.
In this throwaway society.
Yeah. Just always YouTube things.
Yes. Yeah, no kidding. Fix it, damn it.
Yes. All right, well, I'll get the next bottle here.
All right.
See how this goes. So this one is the Little Red One. This beer has come back a couple times now since this, I think. It's 5.6% alcohol. This is the second release. Hmm. And again, this one came out on August 24th, 2016. So we should get notes of blackcurrant, West Coast Sour Dry, herbaceous black tea aroma.
I don't know about red.
Definitely more orangey.
But it is definitely orangey, yeah. Little orange one, then.
I smell Brett.
I do, too.
Oh, yeah. And there's definitely some funk going on, and fruity funk.
Yeah. I can smell the red currant, actually. I get that
now. Yeah?
Black currant, you mean?
Currant.
Yeah, just because of the little red one, right?
Yeah. But definitely a currant note.
Yeah. It's not sweet, but it's tart.
Oh, it's tart.
Well, on the nose, yeah, I mean.
Yeah, taste that. Ooh, that's got some pucker.
Woo-hoo. There's also some sweetness there. Yeah, though. It's kind of balanced.
It's funny because when it first hits your tongue, it's super puckering.
Yeah,
yeah,
and then almost instantly goes away, and then it's just sweet blackcurrant, sweet
balanced
fruit,
up.
Maybe some cherry on the note or on the fruit flavors.
Very interesting.
I'd say there's a little hint of some kind of graininess going on in the background without being too present.
For sure.
No bitterness.
Very little. Yeah.
Yeah.
The sour really is very dominant, though.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's amazing, too, for a beer that's got all this Brett in it, the funk. It spilled out a little bit, but barely. Very little.
That did wow. not. That
was, that wasn't as lively as the first one.
No.
Interesting.
It could be just getting better at the bottle conditioning. Wow. Because Ian, as much as he's well known for these barrel aged and wild beers, he was at a brew pub before that didn't bottle beers.
Right.
So it was just kegs. It was bringing it up and putting it on tap. And when it was gone, it was gone.
Yeah.
Jumping into the bottle condition is totally different.
You're right. Definitely.
And I mean, we've seen breweries struggle with bottle conditioning before. I mean, Old Abbey Ales, when they first opened up with Tony there.
Yeah, they went through some issues.
Yeah.
And some learning, some
I think they didn't have pains. They didn't have great temperature control in their bottle cellar.
I think that was the main thing, is their room wasn't consistent.
Yeah. They made some good beers back then. They still do. It's a different brewer now.
They went through some challenges. I think they did. They had some batches that were over-carbonated and as under. Well. Yeah.
And I mean, under the new ownership, they don't do bottle conditioning at all anymore.
Right.
But
this is unfortunate.
Yeah, but I mean, Steve does some good stuff. And
oh, yeah, no, yeah. Every once in a while,
it's totally
one out
different
of the
brewery.
Park.
It's a different brewery now.
But that Beats by Steve was amazing.
That was fantastic. Right? I get it when I go through Abbotsford.
I think we should reach out to Steve again, and I think we should try to do a version of Beats by Steve and just change it up.
He did
a
second one.
Well, no,
it was so popular he was pressured into doing it again.
We should reach out and try to do a variant of the Beats by Steve with him.
I'd love to.
Yeah.
Steve's great. That was one of the better beers that he put out, actually. And to think about it, a beet beer doesn't necessarily sound that fantastic on paper.
Yeah, but that
he
was
killed
damn
it.
Good.
How about, like, you know, like, I don't know if anyone listens to metal out there, but Sepultura is a band I used to really love. And there was the song Roots, Bloody Roots.
Brazilian.
And we could do some maybe, like, beets and potatoes and do it root vegetables.
Sweet potatoes, parsnips.
you get that dark color from the beets, you know, Roots, Bloody Roots. Steve.
I like it.
I know. Don't steal that trademark.
I like where you're going with
that. It just came out of nowhere. That's awesome. But yeah, no, this beer is like really, really tasty, and I like it's got some sediment in it. Like, you can tell it was bottle conditioned. It's not a brand new beer, but the color's interesting. I like the haziness. Like, it just, it looks great. It tastes great. Smells. The aroma's a little more subdued than the flavor and everything is, but it still smells good.
Definitely more complex than your average soured beer.
Oh, God, yeah. And it's definitely not a kettle sour. No. Like, this is definitely something that's been aged in a barrel for some time.
No, I'm finding the pucker a little much for my taste.
Okay, yeah.
Honestly, but there is still enough in there to interest me.
Mm. Yeah, see, with this one, I'm getting much more of a balanced flavor up front, and then the sourness comes in near the end. Kind of finishes a little on the tart side.
Well, because I find that it actually finishes sweet for me.
Really?
Yeah.
Right, and I'm getting a very sour throughout. I'm getting a surprisingly consistent.
Very interesting.
Weird that we all three get...
You're all wrong!
Well, unfortunately, when it comes down to it, tasting things is very subjective.
Right? Oh, hell yeah, it is.
So I think we've proven that this beer is so complex that three different people can get three different takes on it.
Yeah.
Right? So if you're looking for something that's a little more interesting than your average kettle sour, that's got some complexity to it, that is balanced with some sweetness and some sourness, this is a hell of a good beer too. Yeah,
and this is one of the ones, this has been re-released under different variants as Little Red One since.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, so you've been able to buy this since.
Different variations. Interesting. So yeah, it is very good. I like this. Doesn't live up to its name when you look at the color, but that's a pretty minor complaint.
Yeah. I one of the things that, because you gave us the tasting notes before we started in. And can I grab
them? Yeah, definitely.
And you said blackcurrant, West Coast, sour, dry, herbaceous, black tea aroma.
Mm.
It's one of those things that I always find interesting. Do you read the tasting notes first? Do you try it first?
Yeah, probably try it first, actually.
And everybody has their own take. But sometimes you're given a tasting note and you're really into what the tasting note says. And I admit, I find this one a touch disappointing just because I was looking for that black tea and herbaceousness.
That earthy kind of thing.
I'm not finding it. And I don't know if I would have a different take if I hadn't heard that before.
Okay, well I won't read the other ones.
No, I figure we
stay consistent. Well, and in all fairness, the beer has probably changed after aging for 3 years.
Granted, it's been a while. It's going to have lost some things. Picked... Oh, we are showing our age.
I'm going out on a limb here. I'm going to guess that when this beer was first bottled, the sour component wasn't as strong.
That seems likely.
I think it might have built a bit while it's been in the bottle.
Mm-hmm. Whereas some of the more subtle flavors, like a black tea, is a fairly volatile flavor,
right?
Or would so I have no problem reading them beforehand and keeping this a consistent tasting. I just thought it'd be a fun thing to bring up. Like, some people like to hear that before, some people don't, and
please. Well, I think the tasting notes on the label can be helpful when you're picking the beer out.
Absolutely.
Yes. Well, and also,
I wouldn't want to go strictly by them when you're tasting the beer.
Well, and that was bottling date 3 years ago.
Right.
Yeah. Things have changed.
And then here, so I said that it was re-released since. Yeah. It was re-released on June 7th, 2019.
Ah.
So just this year.
This year.
And some of the tasting notes they had for this year were flavors of oak, black tea, and tobacco.
Mm. Ooh. Okay.
And then they had currants, lend a berry character with dry herbal notes.
So
I'm not getting tobacco on this version.
No, definitely not.
And we haven't mentioned, there's definitely the oak character, very mild, but there is a little oak.
And I'm pretty sensitive to wood. I'm not a big fan of oaked beers or wine, especially if they've been in the barrel too long.
Yeah.
So, and this is subtle enough that it's not something that I've picked up as a concern in any way.
Hmm. From my understanding, talking to Ian, most of these beers in general, or most of the barrel-aged beers in general, are usually aged in Okanagan white wine barrels.
Yeah.
Which are fairly neutral.
Yeah.
Comparatively.
Yeah.
Yeah, as
so they've already been used. A lot of those real woody flavors have been pulled out by the wine. So
you might get a little bit of the vanilla, like the wine character, but you're not going to get a lot of oak.
Yeah,
not like the bourbon barrels you get where one-use barrels, tons of oak, tons of bourbon, big punch in the face. Like this is more subtle.
Those bourbon barrels, the first time and the second time you use them is a different experience than the third time you use them.
Although I like all the times. You just got to remember that you don't leave it in as long for the first time.
That's the key.
It's much like Russell Brewing did a rum barrel aged Imperial Stout, and it was only in there for 9 months or I forget what it was, but it was too long.
That's a long time.
Yeah, it was too long, and it was just too rum.
I'd say 2 to 3 months is enough in most cases.
So you just got to make sure you, depending on how strong that barrel character is going to be, you got to scale back or bring it forward.
Right, and there's a lot of factors into that. Like you were saying, type of barrel, how barrel and
type of beer. Like if you've got a huge, thick, like chocolatey imperial stout, like the Surly Darkness,
you can leave it in for a year.
Yeah. But if you've got a thinner imperial stout or thinner stout, you don't want it as long because you don't want it to kill the beer. This one is in probably a white wine barrel, I'm guessing, because that's what I've heard they usually use. Mm-hmm. And there's little notes of it, but you're not going to be overpowered by it.
It's not a major component of your flavor.
No.
It's just a contributor.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think you're right that the white wine barrels, if that's what they use, I think that seems likely, are much more neutral.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, most of the barrels, after you've used them a couple of times, you're going to lose the character for whatever was in them initially. And then it becomes all about the time that the beer's in contact. And,
right. Then it's just about the wood.
Yeah.
And wooden bugs.
Yeah. Yeah. And wood, I'm not a fan of.
And that's where you and I differ. I love a good wood character. I like a nice oak.
I don't mind it as a contributor, as a small component of the flavors. But once it's been in there too long and it's the first thing you notice, can't stand it.
Love it. You're wrong, I'm right.
Not at all. I mean, there's a place for all of these things.
No.
Everyone's got a different palate.
Everyone's got different palates, yeah, exactly. Yeah,
so, knock yourself out.
Some are just more right than others.
Go chew on a wooden stave. I don't care.
I actually have I've got a whiskey from Kelowna that came with a wooden stave in it.
Really?
Oh, cool. The idea was that you keep it for a while and you let it change it's kind of fun. It's like a little pet you keep. You check it out every so often.
And you know what we'll have to do is once you're finished with that, we should homebrew a beer and put that stave in it.
I thought the exact same thing. Yes.
I mean, we only do 1 gallon batches, so
gallon.
That's really? What we have Brooklyn Brew Shop.
Yeah, we bought a really small setup because, like, frankly, we're not.
That is really small.
Hey, as much as they taste like homebrew.
Yeah.
We've made 2 batches that have gone through and no off flavors that we could detect. Nice. No butter, no weird shit, just homebrew. Like, it was like definitely homebrew.
If only you've had 5 gallons of that beer.
Yeah, I think 2 liters each was good.
Honestly, the IPA also came out kind of green. Our filtration's a little spotty.
Yeah.
Made it good. It was a rye IPA.
I love rye IPAs.
Yeah. That was really tasty.
Rye just takes it to the next level.
It's still a point of pride when Evan Doan said that it was the best first batch of homebrew he'd ever had. But still, that is pretty solid praise. Best first batch.
I've judged some homebrew contests.
Let's put it on top of this. It was at his house. There was a lot of brewers there. Everyone finished their glass.
That is okay.
Everyone finished their glass.
That's a good thing. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I like that.
Hey, there was not one person that wanted to pour it out.
The bottle wanted to pour it out.
Yeah. Because it was overcarbonated. But.
Yeah. Well, that's the truth right there. If nobody's actually pouring their sample out, then it was at least drinkable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that's all I ask. Like, it was the first attempt.
Yeah. Hey, I gladly drank that first bottle like, whoa, this doesn't suck. All right. Yeah. I wouldn't try to sell it to anyone, but...
No. It was definitely not saleable.
Oh, man.
Good stuff.
Yeah, that's really good.
Yeah. A lot different than the first one.
I'm really happy that it's held up nice over these couple of years here. Not that I thought it wouldn't.
What was the percentage on this one again? Quite low?
This one is
6 point something or 5 point something.
Steve?
Right
at the bottom.
5.6.
5.6. And you've aged this for, what, 3 years? Yeah. I'm actually surprised how well it's held up. Something in this low in alcohol, I'm not sure I would have aged this long.
Yeah.
For that kind of alcohol, I probably would have aged it a maximum of like 8 months.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Right?
So I purposely held on to it for a long time.
This is held up well. As an
experiment, yeah.
Very well.
And I wouldn't have done it if it wasn't Ian.
Well, and I think the style also contributed with the lower pH. It's more difficult for something to grow in there.
And it's got Brett, so it's going to be the one growth. Like it's
going to kill.
It's going to be a Brett growth. It's going to be fine. And when we opened it up, and it just fizzed a little bit.
Yeah, not bad.
There's almost there's very little going on in it.
Yeah.
The friggin' old ale was the one that actually exploded, and it wasn't an infection. I don't think because I didn't taste anything.
So
that was
for tasting. A bottle conditioned. "Quote unquote wild beer." I mean, it did quite well in the bottle.
If you look at beers coming out of Belgium, no, not quite similar, but you know, a wild lot of those beers
triples will gush and
do well, not just that. Too. Beers coming in at like less than this, like at 4%, they'll tell you it's good for 20 years. So if they're bottle conditioned properly and they're wild beers, they can last for a very long time.
If there's no pathogens getting in, then the bottle conditioning will take care of any oxygen that made it in there.
Yep.
So oxidization will never be a problem with bottle conditioned beers unless the cap's not on tight.
Yeah. As long as there's nothing in there that shouldn't be there.
Yeah. Well, and if you got enough Brett and other things in there, they'll kill them anyways.
That's true.
this is damn good.
Another win.
Mm-hmm.
So let's try number three.
Yes. More glasses.
Yeah, I like this one because it's more balanced sort of in the beginning and then moves towards the tart in the finish. So this is the third Fellowship release from 2016. Yeah, this one sounds interesting. Nocturnum Galactica. What the heck does it say? Something about Brett with galaxy, fruity, leathery, funky.
So I brought out my
let's try this.
My Fellowship 3 glass from the third Fellowship. It's got this is the more the logo for the third Fellowship with the, I don't know what they are, like kind of mice or something on riding a bike. With a paddle.
Yeah, it's interesting artwork.
Yeah. I mean, it's actually, there's also the four little mice or whatever these are supposed to be.
Yeah,
foxes.
Maybe you're right. Yeah, they do look like mice or rice, rats or mice or something.
The first one, they're rowing a boat. Mm-hmm. On the Fellowship 3, they were riding a bicycle.
So is that the three blind mice maybe?
Well, it's four though.
There's four of them. Okay. So it can't be the three blind.
Four blind mice.
If anybody at Strange Fellows is listening, please, if there's a story behind this.
See how they ride. Yes.
So let's see.
Should we call Ian?
Yep.
I don't have his phone number, do you?
Probably.
So let's see. What's the bottle say? Oh, it's your tink picture. Sorry,
one sec. And I poured it way too hard. Because
yes, you did.
It's got a head.
It's got a big head. So I'm going to wait on the nose a little bit.
This is much more like a reddish color. This is a deep, deep orange kind of amber, almost going into the auburn kind of territory.
So what I'm getting here is oak aged 1 year with Brett, galaxy dry hopped, fruity, funky, and leathery.
Yeah. Tan, off-white head, excellent legs.
Let's see if I can get a style for us.
Smile. Oh. I'm getting fruity. I'm getting a hint of the Brett. Not as much Brett as the other ones.
Getting some nice mineral and herb notes in there.
Mm.
According to this, let me just make sure I'm right. According to this is actually a barrel-aged version of their black IPA.
Oh, interesting.
Ooh. So it's a barrel-aged black IPA.
Really?
Huh.
Not getting a ton of hop aroma.
Well, it's three years later. Old.
Well, yeah. The hops will die down with age.
Getting some little bit of roast.
The hops have held in there for the taste. Like, they're not IPA level anymore, but they're still there.
Yeah.
It's definitely, like, it's not black. It's not like a stout color, which some black IPAs do.
No, it's not opaque.
No.
That's really pleasant.
Dark fruit, some roast. Wow. Low bitterness.
Yeah. Like a really
definitely some notes of the oak.
I'm picking up a little bit of the heat from the alcohol.
Yeah, a little bit.
Getting a little bit of that dryness on the side of my tongue from the Brett.
6.5%. It's still like, pretty light.
Almost like a vegetal quality, like
not in a bad way, but
no, very good. But like the very dry, earthy,
getting that chocolatey, tobacco kind of thing.
Yeah, like no, that. I think the bread definitely is maybe coming out in that really earthy, dry way.
Definitely dried fruit, like raisins, that kind of thing.
I would never expect a barrel-aged black IPA to age this well that, 3 years later.
Yeah, 3 years on, that is amazing.
I mean, it's definitely going to be on the English side of IPA. But
very much, yes.
Look at the legs on this thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the head on mine was huge.
The lacing is phenomenal.
Yeah. I'll take a picture of that and put it on the website.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, this is very pleasing to look at. But it's nice. It finishes more on the dry side. It doesn't finish with a sweetness.
Yeah, it almost wants to edge into bitter just at the end. Yeah. Like, not quite getting there, but...
And again, there is... It's been aging for 3 years, and there is no sign of...
No.
oxidation to me.
I am absolutely
If it's bottle floored. Conditioned, then you'll never have an oxidization problem.
No, true, but it's still, you know...
I'm absolutely floored that this is an IPA that's 3 years on.
Definitely doesn't come off as an IPA anymore.
But black IPAs never really do.
No, but like...
Well, the hops have definitely died.
Yeah, oh yeah.
No, with the aging.
But like a pleasant English pale ale, I can see this being on.
Dark roast?
Yeah, a dark roast pale ale.
Not black, but...
Wow.
It's more like a dark ale, like a Cascadian dark.
Really,
not a full black.
Not as full roast.
No.
Yeah,
there is as I would hint expect from those kind of styles.
Hint of roast.
It's a hint. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a nice burnt toast note in there, actually.
Yeah, like getting the bitterness from the roast.
Right. Yeah. Just like I don't know, almost charcoal-y bitter roast. That's it complements things very well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's working maybe, with the bitterness.
A little hint of something chocolatey or something in the background. Oh,
definitely.
Yeah.
Just as it goes down your throat, like there's something going on.
I'm getting that earthy very, chocolate.
Very dry chocolate, like the cocoa nib or
something. Yeah, it's not milk chocolate. It's not the Halloween candy that's been going around recently. I know this episode will be coming out a little bit later, but...
But I may have bought like 300 pieces of candy this morning on sale.
I haven't done that yet. Shit.
And on that note... These pairing guides going around telling you what beer pairs with what Halloween candy. Just keep in mind that that's complete horse shit and you should not be drinking beer with Halloween candy.
Well, because Halloween candy is shitty chocolate and stuff, but...
That's right.
It's also fun to eat. If you want to
pair your beer with chocolate, pair it with good chocolate. Go get some Thomas Haas or something.
Or Just Jill's chocolate.
Anything
Friend
good.
Friend of the show.
Something good.
Calibo chocolate. Pairs really well with a lot of stouts.
Yeah, not so much with the Aero bars and Hershey crap.
Not so much, no.
Because, like I said, Just Jill's would pair really well with this. Jill was formerly the head chocolatier of Daniel's Chocolates.
Oh,
if you know high-quality chocolates in Vancouver, Daniel's Chocolates is one of the best, if not the best.
Excellent.
And Jill... has taken to the next level now that she's gone on her own. So if you're looking for a chocolate, look up Just Jill's locally.
I like it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Side note, in February, the Hot Chocolate Festival will be coming to Vancouver again.
Ooh.
Daniel's Chocolate often does an entry. They're really good.
Hot Chocolate Festival.
Yeah. Just Google Hot Chocolate Festival Vancouver. You'll find it. But basically local chocolatiers and cafes. Huh. Put out whatever they feel like. So I've seen just straight up like really good just chocolate all the way to ones that come with a smoked oyster that you're supposed to eat with.
Really?
I'll skip that part.
Any with whiskey in them or anything?
A few are, you have to drink those ones on site, but they do have that. Divas at the Met did a couple of alcoholic ones a few years. Those were really good.
Now you're talking my language.
Oh, so it's one of those ones that's a bunch of different locations?
Yeah, you typically every year I do two hot chocolate walks. We'll pick we'll see who's entering. We'll walk between all of them in a given area of town, try a whole bunch out. It's a good time. Yeah.
See, my favorite hot chocolate is cinnamon hot chocolate with whiskey.
Mm. Okay, here we go. So it actually runs from January 19th to February 14th.
Yes, they're typically a month. Okay.
Wow.
Yeah.
It runs up to
close to 36 cafes, bakeries, and chocolatiers throughout the region participate.
I can think of somebody who might be interested in that.
They're all in Vancouver proper. There's usually a corridor kind of down 4th or 12th. That you can walk sort of from the Kits area down towards Main Street. There's usually a bunch down Main Street, some downtown, obviously, and then a few scattered around. Even a couple in the Heights and Burnaby.
Who knew? Stephen knew.
Of course he did.
I have been doing this for some time.
Hot chocolate for me is only if I've been snowshoeing for hours in like minus 20 conditions Celsius. Then I want a hot chocolate or a hot drink. Otherwise, cold drinks. All year, never hot.
Wow. Really?
I don't like hot drinks.
Huh. Mike runs warm.
Yes. I am a furnace on my own.
It's fantastic when you're camping.
It's quite warm in here right now for me.
All right.
But yeah, no, that's still quite good.
Wow. That's really good.
I wasn't sure what to expect. Like 3 years later, you never know what's going to happen.
No.
Yeah. You know, for the color, it's not as malty and rich as I would expect.
Yeah, I agree.
It tastes lighter than it looks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's still got a nice flavor. Like,
oh,
it's,
yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But I
would drink agree. The hell out of this anytime it was put in front of me.
It's pretty damn good.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. But I will agree. It's not quite as rich as I would have expected.
Yeah. There's nothing wrong with that.
No. That's not a knock.
Look at that. This has a bit of lacing. I love it. The look.
Look at my glass. I poured
That's amazing.
Way too hard, and there is lacing halfway up my glass.
That looks great.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
All right. Well, we'll have to get the next one lined up here.
Let's bring it out.
I'll get some more glasses because I got to drink these slowly.
Yes. These are definitely sippers.
Okay. We're here with number 4. Of the Fellowship series here from 2016. This is the Boris Arabica, which is the Russian Imperial with coffee. And,
aged in a wine barrel, too.
Oh, boy.
Which is interesting, because usually Russian Imperial Stouts are aged in bourbon or rum barrels.
Correct.
Or even just a whiskey barrel, but...
Oh, this looks like a dark one.
Was this the one, the red wine barrel that you mentioned? I forgot.
Look at the back. I don't remember.
Let's see here.
Okay, so this is Opeg. This is black.
Yeah.
And the
head... Well, it is a Russian Imperial Stout.
Thick, rocky, tan head. And when I say tan, I mean deep tan.
Yep, red wine barrel.
This is very dark. And I smell coffee.
Which is amazing, because coffee usually is the first thing to die off in a beer that's barrel-aged.
It's a weird coffee aroma, though, because it smells almost like the green beans, like before they're roasted.
Oh,
like,
God.
This smells like a coffee gone cold.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you left it on your desk for the day and come back to it.
Can I borrow your glass? I poured way too hard.
This is becoming a habit.
Well, I'm trying to do too many things at once. All right, perfect.
This has a little bit of lacing, too.
Oh, wow.
That's a coffee beer, but it's not punching you in the face with coffee.
No, that's a pleasantly subtle note on it.
Yeah, it's sitting back with the malt roastiness.
Mm.
Wow.
Yeah, that's much less kicky in the face than a lot of coffee beers tend to be.
There's that little bit of richness in the background.
Yeah, it's got a bit of a coffee with cream thing going.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got a really good toasty, malty backbone, really.
It's got the dark fruits. It's got some hints of red wine, too, though. For me, because like, I'm not a wine fan, but I like it in beer, and I'm definitely getting a little bit of red wine in there.
I'm definitely getting the Venice notes. They're there.
Yeah.
The coffee is definitely there. It's not as... I kind of remember this beer a little bit, and it's not as strong as it was.
Yeah.
But there's still that earthy bitterness that you get from the coffee.
Oh, yeah.
Very much, yes.
There's not as much chocolate in this one as I expected, truthfully.
No,
unless
you're thinking of very, very dark chocolate. It's got some of maybe that character.
That roasted part.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah. And I am getting a little bit of alcohol.
Oh, God, yeah.
I am honestly not getting that.
I'm getting that warming kind of thing. Again, not burning, but it's evident. It's there. And this one is on the higher end, is it not?
I'm
just looking it up here again.
bottle.
There we go.
Yeah, that one.
It is 9%.
Okay.
Mm. Okay, so you're a bit higher than the
others. I have a feeling it might be just a little higher now.
Maybe just a little.
As we were watching the, very slowly seeing the foam creep up the bottle.
Creep. Very slowly. Not like the other ones.
No. Think like a slow StarCraft creep.
No Zergling rush.
Yes. Oh, God, we're old again.
Wow. This might be one of the more drinkable ones out of the bunch.
It's not not a super sweet Russian Imperial Stout, which in some ways I prefer.
It's not thick and heavy.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But it's easy to drink.
Yeah.
For someone who likes a big beer, because it's still a big beer.
Right, like, this is definitely not a session. Yeah.
But it's not some of like the Surly Darknesses we've had in the past, yeah. Or that, I forget what it was called, it's now, but that really filler. Big Russian Imperial Stout we had from Anchorage Brewing quite a while back. Mm. It's not one of those, not pothole filler from House Sound, but it's super, super interesting.
Yeah.
It's on the sort of resiny, or not resiny really, but bitter, earthy, coffee thing. Yeah. But there's not like, it's not like a lot of coffee beers done wrong have green pepper flavor. Yeah. This does not have green pepper at all, and it's 3 years old. This is at the point where a beer would start to show that kind of bad age, and it doesn't have it.
Yeah. Yeah, it finishes definitely not sweet in that. Yeah. It finishes more with the bitter side of things, a little cleaner, a little lighter. Yeah, this is pretty easy to drink, actually, for its alcohol level.
Very much, yeah. Like, I do not read this as a 9 or a higher.
Mm-mm. If I was drinking this and I had to guess, I'd be guessing 6 or 7.
Yeah, that's about right.
Yeah, that's really nice. Definitely picking up that roasted component.
That's very noticeable. It's
not your sweet Russian Imperial Stout. Right.
It's not dominant, but it's very much the keynote.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm happy that it's not sweet.
I bet you are. I could use a little more sweetness, but I like it.
I could take it being a touch more sweet. Just a little to balance.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, that's, again, it's one of those things when you age a beer, you never know what's going to happen. This definitely was more coffee when it first was made.
I'm sure it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, coffee is one of those flavors that dies fairly quickly.
Yeah, I'm actually amazed how much coffee is left in this beer.
Yeah, for three years, that is quite a lot of coffee left.
Yeah. It's almost like say, cold brew coffee or something. A little bit.
Yeah, that's actually a pretty good note very cold brewed.
But no cream, no sugar. Like, it's just
coffee. Just have the lactose addition.
Yeah. Well, I mean, now that we're kind of working our way towards ending this episode, out of these four beers, is there a favorite of the Fellowship Year 1, 2016?
That's a toughie, because they were all so different.
Yeah, that's a tough comparison.
For some reason, I'm leaning towards the number 2, the second one we had.
Little Red One?
Was that the one?
With the current flavor?
That had the nice fruitiness in that. I really liked that one. And number 3 was pretty damn good, too.
Number 3 was the...
this one.
Oh, the Nocturne Galactica, the barrel-aged black IPA.
Yeah, that was good, too.
I think I would go for the Little Red One.
Yeah, I'm with you. I liked that one the best.
I think it took the aging the best. It really sort of... It maintained a lot of interesting notes.
I'm a little torn, I think, really. I think for me, it's either going to be number 1 or number 4.
Really?
So either the gray beard, which is just like me, gray beard, or the Boris Arabica. I would rather this be a little sweeter, and I think it was fresh.
Probably.
I like a sweet Russian Imperial Stout. I like that chocolate and toffee and all that kind of stuff going on. This isn't quite that.
Right.
But it's got other cool things that are going on. Whereas the gray beard, the old ale, I like the like light barley wine flavors that are going on. It's not a barley wine at all, but kind of the mild version of a barley wine.
It reminded you.
Yeah. So both of those beers have got things that I really like going on. Yeah. All four of these beers are great beers, though.
They are.
There's nothing wrong with them. after 3 years.
They've aged well.
Very well. Especially the low alcohol Little Red one. It's amazing. Surprising. It's still really good. Yeah. And that was one of the less lively ones, too.
Yeah.
It was, yes.
Yeah, it was damn good.
So, yeah, Ian, help.
You couldn't go wrong with any of these.
No.
Ian, you are an amazing brewer. Keep up the good work. I can't wait to drink more of your beer in the future. And I have 2 more years of fellowship beers to share at some point.
And there's a good reason these guys are in the top 5 most awarded breweries in BC.
BC, and they probably should be higher, in my opinion.
They do great things, you know, and they come out with interesting events and that stuff too. They're doing some movie nights and
movie nights. Beard competitions always with fun.
Krampus, and all
Krampus,
that,
yeah, so. Yeah. They have different. They, I don't know if they've maybe slowed down a little bit, but they've been doing events almost monthly with different themes from all over the world. So yeah, Krampus, and they had all kinds of different things going on. They do a beard competition once a year.
Beard
competition. Yes, I was a judge one year. Yeah, it was great.
Interesting.
They do some different like events where kids can decorate stuff in the brewery. Parents can drink beer while they're there.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's things for the whole family there.
Yeah.
So if you've never been to Strange Fellows Brewing and you're in Vancouver, or if you're gonna be here, go check them out.
Absolutely.
Really, really, really good brewery. They do all kinds of crazy beers like this. They do some really nice standard beers. They have the Cycle Hops, which is a IPA where they add different hops every time. Just there's always something there. They have a bottle list you can buy into their only drink in the brewery, but they have different bottles you can try. You can try some of the Strange Fellows Fellowship beers in-house only.
Yeah.
It's probably going to be gone by the time you hear this, but when I was there last, they had a 5-year vertical of Boris.
Oh, really?
Yes.
That would be fascinating. So
get that as a tasting flight?
Yeah, it's a tasting flight.
Damn.
In-house only. So they have lots of neat things you can try there, and they make really good beer. And like I said, between the brewing, the front of house, the back of house, staff are amazing there. They're really knowledgeable, really friendly. They want to talk to you. They want to help you.
Strange Fellows has made my favorite beer in the last 2 years.
Oh, really?
Strange Resemblance.
Oh, okay, yeah.
I bought so many bottles of that last summer. One of my favorite beers ever, like, of all times.
No way. And that was a version of the...
it was a version of a collab they did.
Which was the... was it Strange Time for Modern Fellows? Was that what it was?
I believe that's what it was.
Yeah, which was a Modern Times and Strange Fellows collaboration. Oh,
so good.
Both breweries are amazing breweries. One from San Diego, one from Vancouver. I think one of my favorite, and unfortunately, because of a naming dispute, they can't make the name anymore. That is it, the Coup de Fooder?
Is it?
Oh, it was such a friggin' amazing beer.
Yeah? I don't know if I tried that.
It was the very first beer they released out of their fooder. So good. But there's a winery that had a similar name, and they poo-pooed the name of the beer. So the beer can come back, just not with the same name. But yeah, it was just amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, they're doing no wrong at Strange Fellows.
No.
If you haven't been there, go there.
Yes. And they also have a pretty decent food program. It's mostly snack stuff, like charcuterie boards, you know, the breads, the pepperonis. I think they got some chips and dip and stuff. So
nothing too unusual.
Yeah. It's not a brew pub at all, but you can get some food there that can get you through all the beers you're trying. Take transit or get a cab home.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for tuning in. If you want to support us, you can go to patreon.com/specificbeerchat. Shout out to our Patreon supporters. That's Indie Beer Show out of San Diego and Steve.
Thank you.
That was very good.
I'm getting better at that.
Thanks for tuning in to Pacific Beer Chat. We can be found on all podcast apps as well as at pacificbeerchat.com. If you find a podcast app we are missing on, let us know and we'll endeavor to fix that. Leave us a review on iTunes as it helps expose more people to the show. You can email us at feedback@pacificbeerchat.com. We can be found on all major social media apps at Pacific Beer Chat. Logo design was by Tim, the craft beer tourist. Audio editing done by Cam, known as Cam on Tap on Twitter. To play us out, here is a clip of the song Lothian by the band Conundrum, performed by Kevin Ems. Find them at conundrum-music.bandcamp.com. The song that plays us out is part of our intro.